Oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 2020, 1,724 deaths. In January of this year, 165 deaths. And now, in February of this year, we get the news of another 155 deaths. Each month, it's the same story. A new record, another heartbreaking milestone reached in a deadly health crisis. The government's response in the chamber and beyond remains the same every month. Earlier this month, the Premier said, and I quote, "To focus on the societal disaster is the responsibility of all of us, not just the minister, not just families who are grieving, but everyone in our community." So perhaps the Premier can get up today and tell us what specific steps he is taking to ensure that next month, and the month after that, and the month after that, we are not having the same conversation.
Premier of British Columbia.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for her question and the spirit with which it was offered. And I agree, and I know all members of this House agree, that the persistent opioid crisis has affected families in every corner of British Columbia. Unacceptably high numbers have been exacerbated by the global pandemic. We've not been able to have people gathering and congregating, so more and more users are finding themselves alone and isolated and not having someone at their side when they most desperately need it. So as we see public health orders relieved over the next number of months, I think we're going to see a positive outcome when it comes to the unacceptably high opioid deaths. But there's a whole host of other initiatives we can and have been working on, and I'll inventory some of them for the member. Firstly, of course, we want to make sure that simple possession is not a crime. We all understand, I think we all agree, we can debate the edges on these questions, but ultimately, if someone has an addiction challenge, they are a patient, not a criminal. And we need to make sure we disaggregate those who are preying on vulnerable populations for criminal intent and those that are just trying to get by riddled with an addiction. So we're putting resources into treatment. We're putting resources, and the member and I will be talking more about that after question period. But we're putting money into resources, we're putting money into housing, we're trying to build up the capacity within communities, large and small, to address these challenges in a compassionate way, not in a crime-fighting way, which had been the approach, as all of us know, for many decades prior to the turn of the century. And it's only now that I think many communities are coming to terms with the fact that a four pillars approach does involve enforcement, but it involves also making sure that harm reduction is in place, making sure that the services that people need are there, and most importantly, treatment. And I'm hopeful that as the questions continue through this question period, that we all burrow down and get to that focus that we're going to need to make new investments in communities while we grapple with COVID to come through this stronger than we went into it, and making sure that all of us redouble our efforts as individual legislators and as people as part of communities, that we're doing what we can to reduce stigma and focus directly on the challenges these people face.
Leader of the Official Opposition on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the answer from the Premier. The loss of 155 lives in February represents a 107% increase over the same month in 2020. This is a situation that continues to get worse. It's taking people from all age groups and economic situations, and nearly 60% of the deaths are occurring in private residences. Earlier this month, the Premier said, and I quote, "If we keep our shoulder to the wheel, keep focused on that, and have respectful dialogue as we've done today on this important issue, we will make progress, the progress that all of us demand, not just now, but in the future," end quote. Well, the numbers paint a tragic picture, and we're not making progress. Can the Premier tell us specifically whether his delayed budget will include a significant increase in badly needed resources for mental health and addiction services?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And I have to take a step back to fully answer the member's question. We did see a significant decline in opioid deaths in 2018-2019. As a result of a concerted effort by frontline workers, first responders, the availability of naloxone, the ability for us to work in congregate settings to make sure that people were getting the care that they needed, With the advent of COVID-19, those congregate settings no longer were available to people, and we saw more and more people isolating, as I said in my first response. But we've also seen an increase in the toxicity of the drug supply because the borders have been slammed shut, and that means that those that are preying on the vulnerable are using more toxins to spread their supply out and do damage to human beings. And that is beyond reprehensible, but it is a challenge that we try to address, working through public safety to make sure law enforcement has the tools they need to continue to stamp out the flow of toxins into the supply, and also working with the federal government to make sure that we can have initiatives, and the Minister of Mental Health and Addiction has been at the vanguard on this, to make sure that we do have safe supply and safe alternatives for people using street drugs that can help them through their challenging times so we can get them into treatment, as all of us want to do. But it is a multi-pronged approach, and as I fully agree with the member, we all get this, the numbers are going up because we cannot congregate together as we did in the past, because we cannot regulate the drug supply. There are initiatives underway. We need leadership from both orders of government and from communities. As the member full knows, and I look at the regional distribution of my colleagues across the way, this is not a downtown Vancouver issue, it's a BC issue. And that's the first order of business, that we all go back to our communities, me in suburban rural Victoria, and the member, leader of the opposition, to her community in Prince George, and talk about this as not someone else's problem, it's our problem. It's our brothers, our sisters, our moms, our dads. It's people who find, through no fault of their own, addicted to an insidious substance that requires intervention, medical intervention, not criminal intervention.
Member for Surrey White Rock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the minister said it was a disservice to question the closing of much-needed services. Today, we sadly see why we are asking those questions when we see the closure of services in Penticton, Carrimias, and Vancouver. Young people are struggling with mental health and addictions. Two Victoria teens who needed services desperately, and I think we can all agree, were let down by the system. Met with the Premier and the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions, and this is what they had to say. They say, reach out, but where? And to who? And how? Because you can't. You really can't. It's a great phrase to say, but unless there's stuff actually in place to support people reaching out, it's empty promises. So my question is to the Premier. We need less words and more action. Will this Premier put forward a budget that actually supports people with mental health and addictions?
Premier.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. And we do need actions, but we also need words, because we need to talk about this openly and candidly, not just in this legislature, but in our schools, in our healthcare settings, so that Emma and Ella, the two young women who I had the good fortune of engaging with a week or so ago, had received what they characterized as positive, affirming services when they were youth, but when they aged out and became adults, the situation changed. That was news to me, and of course the minister was aware of this, and she is taking steps, and I'm sure in subsequent questions she can answer directly the member's question. But what I took away from a discussion with two young women living in suburban Victoria, not the downtown east side, not in a far and remote part of British Columbia, but in basically the capital city of British Columbia, were satisfied with their services as youth and appalled by the services that they were presented when they became adults. That's a challenge for us to fix. That's a challenge for the health authority and practitioners. But this isn't about throwing people under the bus. What those young women did was what we've asked them to do. They wanted help, they asked for help, and when they went to receive it, it wasn't up to their expectation. So that means we all do better. That means practitioners have to do better. We need to make sure we're preparing young people through our K-12 system to meet the realities of an increased challenge of mental health as a result of COVID and a whole host of other challenges that modernity presents for all of us. You know, this is not the Leave It to Beaver anymore. This is a complex world that we're asking young people to come into with little or no expectation of how they're supposed to act, and we need to be there as adults to help steward them from their childhood into their adulthood. And when it comes to addressing mental health issues, I believe we put some $3 billion into public, uh, into mental health services through our health authorities across the province. And if we need to do more, we will do more, because this is the challenge of our times. It's not just the addiction challenges that the Leader of the Opposition raised, but it is mental health for young people, regular people walking down the street that need help, and they need compassion, not stigma.
Member for Surrey White Rock on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Premier for the response. And the Premier rightly issued a challenge to all of us today when we go back into our communities and advocate for the support we need. I just don't know how we do that when we're seeing what we're seeing in something like Penticton. We need to be focused on the present. Here's a quote: "The province should provide more comprehensive and wraparound services to youth using drugs and their families, particularly in their communities." Those were the words of the representative for children and youth. We've seen this government close services that are community-based. It's the wrong approach, and this government knows it. We need more services, not fewer, to the point the Premier just previously made. So for the Premier, as we see these numbers grow tragically, will he commit today to putting the resources that British Columbians need and deserve for mental health and addictions?
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. Good ideas can come from all sides of the House, and I look forward to the member's support for our budget. We have been on a path of committing unprecedented increased supports in every form. Since we first formed government in 2017, there was no system of care in place at that time. We've been working day and night in every way to build that system up. And the challenge of fighting now two public health emergencies has put tremendous strain on the healthcare system in British Columbia. And so I'm encouraged to hear the support across the aisle for increasingly deeper spending. That's certainly something that we committed to British Columbians again in our second election, both 2017 and 2020, and that's something that we are working hard towards. Over the last 5 years, we did commit over almost $750 million, and that has
Thank you. Member for Saanich North and Islands.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The satellite images don't deceive. No matter how the Minister of Forests chooses to organize the devastation in her mind, it's hard to unsee the fact that there are no valleys remaining on southern Vancouver Island that are like Fairy Creek in the Premier's writing. You don't even need to bother counting trees. Just look at the pictures. You can't miss the reality that the government of British Columbia has already laid waste to most of the monumental, high productivity old growth in our region. This government, like previous provincial governments, signed revenue sharing agreements with Indigenous nations and industry, in this case, logging. They're often very narrow conversations to facilitate logging above all else, without putting forward other economic opportunities. Mr. Speaker, let me be clear. An approach of take it or leave it without alternatives to logging does not provide real options for economic development. My question is to the Premier. Will he direct the Ministers of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation, Finance, and Forests to develop a package for our relatives in Pachitat that includes conservation financing and a buyback of the cut blocks in order to provide real options to save Fairy Creek?
Minister of Forest, Lands, and Natural Resource Operations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. The member needs to know that we are dedicated to bringing in a fundamental shift in forestry, to make sure that we are working with Indigenous nations, and to make sure that we are protecting and preserving forests for people today and for years to come. And we're going to do this important work while supporting forest workers and communities. And I know that the member has expressed concerns in the past, and I will agree with him in that for too long, communities did not have a say in how their forests were managed. For too long, the people in the region did not have a say, and definitely Indigenous nations did not have a say. So we are taking a different approach. You know, we were the first province in Canada to bring in the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples that all people in the House sat and supported. You know, this legislation creates a path forward that respects the rights of Indigenous peoples. And we are committed to working forward on this path and committed to working with nations and ensuring that we can all move forward to ensure that we have a sustainable, well-managed forest industry for years to come in this province.
Member for Saanich North and Islands on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And let's be clear, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples isn't an endpoint. It's a path that we're walking on today, and that Ferry Creek watershed is the very definition of the high-risk ecosystem that the Old Growth Strategic Review Panel recommendation number 6 called for immediate deferral while an old growth strategy is developed. The Union of BC Indian Chiefs is calling on this government to provide critical funding needed to fulfill its obligations to Indigenous people to implement the recommendations of that old growth panel. They say, and I quote, "The current landscape of old growth logging has been exacerbated over years by successive BC governments working to commercialize all old growth timber and foster an economic dependence on old growth logging in First Nations communities. They have achieved this by arranging agreements for revenue sharing, employment, joint ventures, and tenures for old growth timber in contentious areas for First Nations who face limited economic opportunities as a result of years of colonialism and racism. Tomorrow, the courts will hear an injunction request by Teal Jones to remove blockades from Ferry Creek and gain access to logging in this valley. My question again is to the Premier. Will he direct his ministers to develop a package for our relatives in Pachitat that includes conservation financing and a buyback of the cut blocks in order to provide real options to save Ferry Creek?"
Minister of Forests and Land.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we are moving forward with the report that the member has referenced. We already took that first step where we discussed and engaged with Indigenous nations to ensure that we could defer 9 areas across the province to defer old growth forests right across the province. And we recognized that the number one recommendation in the report was to engage in government-to-government basis with Indigenous nations. And we are moving forward to do that, to ensure that we have those discussions with the nations. And we are starting to do those discussions, but reminding the member that it is critically important that we have those discussions, that we have the time to do it, but that we also make sure that we are having those discussions with industry, with the working people, with the communities that are affected, as the member has mentioned. But I want to make it clear that the Gourley and Merkel, that the Merkel strat, the reports, the recommendations that they brought forward, you know, it's said to make sure that we have that discussion with Indigenous nations. It's critically important we do that, and we are committed. We are committed to doing that.
Member for Kootenay East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As per my 2-minute statement today, communities along the eastern BC border have been forced to travel long distances to Vancouver for healthcare needs instead of what has been historically received treatment in nearby Alberta. 6 mountain passes, 1,000 kilometers, make a 12-hour trip into 14 or more hours in the winter, sometimes impossible due to mountain pass closures and dangerous winter driving conditions that can happen in a moment's notice. For example, in my riding, an 8-year-old child with reoccurring epileptic seizures, as well as a family needing neonatal care for 14 weeks, was forced to travel 12 hours to travel to Vancouver in the middle of winter instead of 3 hours to Calgary. These trips are costly, unsafe, and stressful for families. So to the Premier, what has the Premier done to ensure families can get urgent care in Alberta when it is the closest and safest place to go?
Minister of Health.
Well, Honourable Speaker, the member will note, because we've talked about this on a number of occasions, that we work closely with the Alberta government to ensure that care is provided. The reality is that wait times in many clinical areas, the majority of clinical areas, are less in BC than they are in Alberta. And that's a challenge, of course, for our friends in Alberta as well, although the member will agree with me that we appreciate the ongoing work of the government of Alberta to accommodate especially emergency BC patients and to work with us to try and solve these problems. So we're in regular contact with them. This is not a technical issue, Honorable Speaker. We have done, I think, an excellent job, or the Interior Health Authority has done, in providing services, but we clearly have to continue to do this work with the government of Alberta, and we will. Their decisions they make about their health system are obviously have some impact on people in British Columbia and people in the Kootenays who get care, and we're going to continue to work with the government of Alberta to help resolve some of the concerns that the member has with respect to local issues while we continue to improve wait times for services in British Columbia.
Member for Kootenay East on supplemental.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it's very disappointing to hear this minister sing from the same song sheet that he has for the past 2 years on capacity issues when it clearly is not. I have sworn testimonials from physicians in BC and in Alberta that have a great referral system. The space is there, but once it gets to Alberta Health Services, it gets shut down. This is more of a billing issue than anything else. And I think the minister should be really concerned about it because it's really costing a lot of families some very tough times and hardships. The lack of action or misaction from this premier is concerning. I have a constituent in dire need of tertiary eye care in Alberta. In surgery, an intraocular gas is placed in the eye that does not allow for travel at elevated heights. Driving over mountain passes or flying are no option. If he could go to Calgary for the procedure, he could come home shortly after with no disruption to his dialysis treatments, which he gets 3 times a day, and carry on with daily life with his support systems in place. My office has made many pleas to the staff in the Health Minister's office since February 12th with no response whatsoever. There's other jurisdictions in Canada, Lloyd Minster, for example, they have memorandums of understanding between Alberta and Saskatchewan, Ottawa and Hull, Quebec, have memorandums of understanding between those two provinces to allow healthcare to pass seamlessly between the provinces, and yet no action on this minister. So maybe the premier can take a shot at it, since the ministers of health is not helping out much. Will the premier commit today to ensuring my constituents can get needed care in Alberta when it is the closest option?
Minister of Health.
Well, with great respect to the member, and I think members of the House will know that they always get great respect when issues of constituents are brought to my office. We're going to continue to work with the government of Alberta to resolve issues. Some of these issues, remember, are made in another jurisdiction. Some of the decisions are made in another jurisdiction. But we work closely with the government of Alberta, not just to provide, ensure that British Columbians have access to service, but often as well that citizens of Alberta receive access to care, both well in British Columbia, which they frequently are, and when they need to travel here. So these are issues were worked out, as the member knows, because I regularly do this with his office and his team. I'm happy to work on any individual case with his office or anyone else. I would say that one of the fact is that British Columbia in many areas of care has lower wait times. And this has been a subject of concern, as the member will know, in Alberta, where we also seek access to care, especially for emergency care of the type the member talks about. So we're going to work on it. We work on it all the time. We work on it every day. And I don't think it's an issue of disrespect or commitment by people in the Ministry of Health, as the member suggests, but rather some real challenges that are faced in Alberta and in British Columbia that we need to always make improvements on. I think people the Kootenays deserve that, and that's the care that we try and provide every day.
Member for West Vancouver, Sea to Sky.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Despite residential rent freeze, some renters in British Columbia are still seeing rent increases of as much as, believe it or not, 300%. This is for one reason and one reason only, and that is because their landlord is the province of British Columbia and they live on Crown land. For some reason, the government has excluded itself from its own rent freeze rules. The Premier is holding himself and his government to a different standard than is applied to every other landlord in British Columbia. Can the Premier please explain why he is charging renters on Crown land rent increases of as much as 300% at any time, let alone in the middle of a pandemic?
Attorney General.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, our government is incredibly proud of our to protect and support renters and also to recognize the important role that landlords play in providing housing. The issue the member raises is an interesting one. I'm not familiar with it. I look forward to speaking to him about it. And I'll point out to him, our commitment is really clear. We want to make sure that all British Columbians can find affordable, safe housing in our province. We've dedicated billions to it. We passed legislation around it, sometimes over the objection of the members across the way, including around rent evictions. But this doesn't have to be partisan, and I'm thrilled to hear the member bring forward a question about how we ensure affordability for people. And I look forward to working with him about it. I look forward to hearing more. Thanks.
Member for West Vancouver, Sea to Sky, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that is good to hear. Although we have been corresponding with the FLNR for 2 years now on this particular issue, but clearly, and we understand that there is a yet another review underway that has been going on for some 4 or 5 years now in the minister in the FLNR without any progress. But and while that is a review is nice, it is of cold comfort to Joan Amundson, whose rent has gone from $5,650 last year to potentially $19,650 this year, and who knows where next year. This rent increase is unconscionable and frankly would be illegal if government didn't have its own set of rules for being a landlord. Will the Premier cancel this 300% rent hike and change the rules so the government must play by the same rules as every other landlord in British Columbia?
Minister of Forests.
Well, I thank the member for the question, and I ask him that, you know, I'd advise him to please, you know, reach out to me and we can discuss this further. It's an issue of people who live on Crown lands and they are the assessment is being done to ensure that they are charged a rent based on the assessment. As we know, assessments are going up across the province in some areas, and I believe in the member's own area, they're going up there, and there's a formula that's used, and I know the ministry is looking into this and seeing what we can do, and I appreciate the member raising it. Thank you.
Member for Nechako Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And while 300% or 86%, I mean, can you imagine that, Mr. Speaker? It's pretty good if you're the landowner. It's certainly not very good if you're the renter. And I, quite frankly, I think the Premier and everybody on that side of the House would agree that is completely unacceptable to see that kind of an increase at this time. And Melanie, who is in Chickamas Valley, says, and I quote, I am a single mom on disability with a special needs son. My mom is sick and in care, and I'm struggling to keep up with the lease, end quote. This increase is unacceptable, and I know the Premier has implemented a rent freeze. Why will he not extend that rent freeze to his own government and tell Melanie that he is canceling this 86% increase?
Minister of Forest, Lands and Natural Resource Operations.
Well, I thank the member again for the question and for bringing this one to my attention. I'd be only too happy to discuss it with the MLA responsible for the Chickamas area, and I encourage them to reach out.
Member for Nechako Lakes on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it might be fine and dandy for the members to engage and the ministers to want to engage, and I accept that. That's good that they want to engage because this is a serious issue. But it is a serious issue and it's a real simple answer. The compassionate thing to do is to just cancel these increases. This is a very difficult time. And Melanie goes on and I quote, an 86% increase in rent is unacceptable anywhere, especially during COVID. And I think especially by a government that has the power to be considerate and reasonable, end quote. Melanie and her family's lived on this property for generations. She is trying to figure out how she can stay on this property. It's unacceptable that this should go forward, and she is worried about her. She's worried and legitimately worried about her future. Through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier, cancel this increase. Tell Melanie today that she doesn't have to worry and that she has a place to live and she doesn't have to worry about being turfed out by an unreasonable rent increase.
Minister of Forests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'll say that the ministry is looking at this. This is a policy that was brought in place under the previous government, the previous Liberal government, just to clarify, and that it's done on with the Assessment BC. And Assessment BC looks at the cost of price of property around the area and makes those adjustments based on that. We are looking into it, as I said, and I would be only too happy to discuss it with the MLA responsible for the people that the constituents who are raising the issues. Thank you.
The bell ends question period.